What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about them? What does he call the mixed devotees in Sanskrit?
Mishra.
What?
Mishra.
No, what does Krishna call them? Udara. Udara. They're magnanimous souls, actually. Udara, Sarvahi Vaitain. They're all magnanimous souls. They're very good. This is in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. Okay, we are working. Hare Krishna. Okay, now we have a microphone. So why are these pious acts good? Here, Brahma is saying these pious acts are good, actually. Prabhupada explained to the purport, well, pious acts are also good. Yes.
He says that anything done on account of the Lord is a permanent asset and accumulation of form of unseen piety and perpetual cremation of our devotees.
Yes. It's agata sukriti. It accumulates as unseen piety. So Prabhupada says that anything done on account of the Lord, this is the end of the report. Make it a little lower. Anything done on account of the Lord is a permanent asset and accumulates in the form of unseen piety for gradual promotion to the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord. These undetected pious activities will one day result in full-fledged devotional service by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, any pious act done on account of the Supreme Lord is also recommended here for those who are not pure devotees. So we have some hope, even if we're not pure devotees. We can accumulate our pious credits and one day we'll turn into pure devotees of the Lord. Rama is giving us that hope. So this pious, real pious activities are mixed devotional service. That's the only kind of pious activities in this world. Other piety will not help you so much. What do you think, my brother?
I was just reflecting on 17, Udara.
Udara.
One of the solutions of the church, of course, you have to say that.
One of them.
Actually, within those four, they're not all sakam.
They're not all sakam, that's right.
Actually, three are sakam. Only one and
three are sakam. Yes, yes.
There's a distinction between.
There's a distinction, right. So, Udara, before in the 17th verse, he was talking about Nishkam.
Yeah.
But then he says, but all of them are Udara. But all of them are. Okay. Yes. So, Udara, verse 14. Let me offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Transcendence, who is eternally distinguished by his internal potency. His indistinguishable impersonal feature is realized by intelligence for self-realization. I offer my obeisances unto him, who by his pastimes enjoys the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. So Prabhupada says in the purport, the Supreme Lord is eternally distinguished from the living entities by his internal potency, although he is also understood in his impersonal feature by self-realized intelligence. Devotees of the Lord, therefore, offer all respectful obeisances unto the impersonal feature of the Lord. So here's a very interesting statement by Srila Prabhupada. The devotees offer obeisances to the impersonal feature. Why do the devotees offer obeisances to the impersonal feature of the Lord? Yes.
Because it's part of Krishna.
Because it's part of Krishna. That's a good answer. Yes? Anything else? Well, yes, Maharaj.
Because they keep it, they keep thoughts of a personal life far away from them, so they offer their obeisances from a distance.
Okay. Maharaj says they offer obeisances from a distance because they keep their personal thoughts far away.
Bhaktivinoda mentions that.
Okay. And it is the back of the Lord. As it is part of the Lord. The personal feature is Krishna's back. Yes? Okay, in Raj it's also there, but it's full of Ananda. So if you happen to see it, I don't know how you can see it, but if you happen to come upon the impersonal feature of the Lord in Braj, it'll be full of Ananda. So what I had was that the devotees, they appreciate the impersonal feature because they appreciate the wonderful activities of the Lord and how he plays with his energies, personal and impersonal, how he uses his different energies for his pastimes. So in the purport in the middle, the word rasa is significant herein. Yes. I should have asked you that question, but I didn't. Anyway, rasa. Rasa is very important in this verse, Kapha says, because it indicates Krishna. Brahma is indirectly indicating Krishna by the word rasa that is in the last line, rasayate namahida chakrameshanaya rasayate. So Prabhupada says the rasa dance is performed by Lord Krishna in the company of the Kavya dancers at Vrindavan. And the personality of Godhead Garbhadaksha Krishna is also engaged in rasa enjoyment with his external potency, by which he creates, maintains, and dissolves the entire material manifestation. Indirectly, the Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Shri Krishna, who is actually ever engaged in rasa enjoyment with the gopis, as confirmed in Gopal Tapani Upasya in the following verse, Parar Kante Sopavita Gopavesha Me Purusha Stat Avir Paruva. So this is, somehow or other, Krishna is in all the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada in his purports is often encouraging us that we should go and join Krishna in his rasa-lila pastimes. I think one more purport will be in these prayers where Prabhupada says that. So verse 15, let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of worldly affairs. One who invokes his transcendental names even unconsciously at the time he quits his life is certainly washed immediately the sins of many, many births and attains him without fail. So even unconsciously, there's a verse in the first canto, even unconsciously if you chant the holy name, you're protected from fear personified. So this is our hope, because often we do chant unconsciously when we chant our rounds. And so even if we chant unconsciously, Krishna will help us. But of course, this is a time of death. This is a time of death. Yavibhati Svayamvaya, 1.1.14. So this is Prabhupada in the purport talks about Krishna, who's just like an actor on the stage. Now, in the middle of the purport, Prabhupada gives a very interesting example how Krishna imitates the activities of this world. When the Lord appeared as Lord Krishna, he played the part of the son of Yashoda and Nanda, and he lifted Govardhan Hill. Although lifting a hill is not his concern, he can lift millions of Govardhan Hills, but his simple desire, he does not need to lift it with his hand. So Prabhupada says that he can just will it and the hill will go up. But he didn't do that in his lila in Vrindavan. He didn't act like the Supreme Lord. He actually had lifted it with his hand. Of course, nobody could do it but the Lord. But still, that was his imitation. Prabhupada says he used his hand. He didn't do it with some mystic power, like some mystic yogi. So many people nowadays, they're showing special powers and saying, I'm God. Well, Krishna, he showed special powers, but he did it in a very interesting way. So he didn't disturb the lila. Here's a small boy lifting up the hill. Anyway, so Prabhupada says, he does not need to lift it with his hand, but he imitates the ordinary living entity by this lifting. And at the same time, he exhibits his supernatural power. Thus his name is chanted as the lifter of Govardhan Hill, or Shri Govardhan Atari. Therefore, he acts in his incarnations, and his partiality to the devotees are all imitations only, just like the stage makeup of an expert dramatical player. His acts in that capacity, however, are all omnipotent. So this is actually what is relevant for us here. And remembrance of such activities of the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is as powerful as the Lord himself. So this is the relevance for us. If we remember these pastimes, we can be delivered. If we remember, we have Krishna in our mind. There's a verse in the first canto, Yadavyasinayukta Karma Bhante Bandhanam, that with the sword of remembrance, the devotee cuts all his karmic reactions. So this is why these incarnations are so important for us. 1, 2, 15. Mm. 1, 2, 15. So Prabhupada 15. Prabhupada says at the end of Purport, Ajagala remembered the holy name of the Lord, Narayan, by merely calling the name of his son Narayan. Thus, and that gave him a complete opportunity to achieve the highest perfection of love. Verse 16. Your lordship is the prime root of the tree of the planetary systems. This tree has grown by first penetrating the material nature in three trunks, as me, Shiva, and you, the Almighty, for creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And we three have grown with many branches. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you, the tree of the cosmic manifestation. So we have a picture of this tree on the flip chart and on the board. The tree of the cosmic manifestation with the three trunks, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And if we understand this tree, we'll understand creation, maintenance, and destruction. So now I have some branches for each of these trunks. Who can tell me what are these branches? Some of, what are some of, like for creation, for Brahma, what would be the branches, the main branches of Brahma? Yeah.
Would be his sons?
Yes.
His expansions, Marichi, Bhrigu.
Yeah. The, okay, so one branch is his sons, Marichi, Bhrigu, the great sages who are Prajapatis.
Daksha,
all these, the Prajapatis, the sages, that's one of the branches of Brahma. And another one is actually Brahma himself, and another branch is something else that Brahma did in order to create, something that gave him strength to create. Tapasya, yes. So there's a reference for this, and you can see it there, but try to guess it before you look up the reference, those of you on computers. So Brahma says that in the beginning there is the Prajapatis, Tapasya, and myself. And then when maintenance happens, there's three other things are there. There's Vishnu, and there's three other things. Actually, there's three things besides Vishnu. No idea? Okay, I'll tell you. Religion is one, devotional service. Religion or devotional service, and the demigods and the kings of the planets, they are for maintenance of the universe. Yeah, Manvantaras, the kings of the planets, the monarchs, the demigods, and religion is their maintenance. And then for destruction, three things also. That is, okay, might as well flip this here. I've got it on the next slide. The three things for Shiva. Santibati, would you like to just turn the page? Yeah, I've got, yes, Maharaj.
Your religion.
Yes.
Lord Shiva himself.
Lord Shiva.
And the atheist.
The atheist. I've got actually atheist and anger in your religion. So those things are necessary for destruction. So these are the branches of creation, maintenance, and destruction, the main branches. And the reference is, I wrote on that, 2739. In the purport, Prabhupada explains this very elaborately. The purport to this verse that we heard last year, that what are the branches of creation, maintenance, and destruction. So in the beginning there's Brahma, Tapasya, and the sages, Prajapatis. In the middle there's Vishnu with religion, the demigods, the kings, and the lamas. And at the end there's Shiva with irreligion and atheist full of anger. So this is the different phases of creation. So in this third canto, we're going to be hearing mostly about creation and maintenance. And Shiva will come at the end, in the 12th canto, the end of the Bhagavatam. So another point with this verse 16, at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says this verse defeats the impersonalist theory that Brahman is voidness. How is that? What is Prabhupada's explanation of that? Yeah.
You can't have a reflection of
the
tree if there's no tree.
Right. So you can't have a reflection of a tree if there's no real tree. So that's what Prabhupada says in the purport here. Okay, verse 17. That's the end. Should I read it? I can read it for you. end of purport, Prabhupada says, the impersonalist theory that Brahman is void of all creativeness is false because the shadow tree described in Bhagavad Gita cannot exist without being a reflection of a real tree. The real tree is situated in the eternal existence of spiritual nature, full of transcendental varieties, and Lord Vishnu is the root of that tree also. The root is the same for Lord, both for the real tree and the false, but the false tree is only the perverted reflection of the real tree. The Lord, being the real tree, is here offered obeisances by Brahma on his own behalf and also on behalf of Lord Shiva. Verse 17. People in general, all who engage in foolish acts, not in the merely beneficial activities enunciated directly by you for their abundance. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans and struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. I therefore offer my obeisances unto him who acts as eternal time. So here the purport, Prabhupada says, people in general all engage in senseless work. They're systematically unmindful of the real beneficial work, which is devotional service of the Lord, technically called the Arjuna regulations. So how are they systematically unmindful? What is this systematically unmindful work that Prabhupada is referring to? My first thought is the scientists.
Yeah.
They're very systematically neglecting. Yes. So the scientists, yeah. I think the scientists are what are being Prabhupada is referring to here. Systematically unmindful.
Most people have plans.
Yeah.
Most people have plans.
They're systematic.
Everybody's systematic. Not just the scientists. Yes. So the scientists, they're more systematic in trying to avoid God as the creator in their theories. Okay. So we'll have a little review. Verse 14 talks about Brahman, and Paragraph 15 about incarnations and Nam, 16 the moon avatars, and 17 is time, because we're going very quickly, so have a little review. Oh, at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says something very interesting about the Gyanis and Yogis. Let's see what he says here. The systems of Dhyana and Yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. Can you believe it? So sometimes Prabhupada says he accepts them. You know, they're on the path, actually. They're transcendentalists, but here, it's so heavy, the Gyanis and Yogis, they're also rebellious acts.
Narottam
poison, yes.
Yeah.
Narottam Das Thakur goes further to say, Gyanakanda, Kanda, Karakanda, Kevala, Vishara, yes?
Yeah.
So Prabhupada says, they're indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. There's no auspicious activity except Archana of the Lord. Yeah, and yoga are sometimes accepted within the purview of Archana when the ultimate name is Vishnu and not otherwise. Conclusion is that only devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings eligible for salvation. Others are vainly struggling for existence without any actual benefit. Yeah, so that's Shamaika Vikavala. If Narada Muni says that jnana without relationship to the Supreme is not very beautiful, it doesn't look very nice. Does he? He says that to Vyasadeva. It's not very nice without relationship. It's 1.5.12, I think, something like that. Naishkarma is not very beautiful without Krishna. And in fact, it's Shama Eva Vikavala. If you don't do it for Krishna, then it's useless waste of time. Verse 18, Your Lordship, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are indefatigable time and the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Although I am situated in an abode which will continue to exist for a time duration of 2 paravas, although I am the leader of all other planets in the universe, And although I have undergone many, many years of penance for self-realization, still I offer my respects unto you. Now, does this verse remind anybody of a verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Some of the verse, part of the verse. Bhagavad Gita. It says, Adi Makaya, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices. And Lord Brahma, who is the Lokapala, he is offering obeisances to. Yes? Yes. Bhaktaram Yagatapasam, Sarvaloka Vaisharam. That he's the enjoyer of all sacrifices, he's the Lord of all the leaders of the planets. So we're going to find the third part later on, a few verses later. So we have a certain time on. But we're getting the first two parts of that verse here. So, Sarvaloka Vaisharam, Lord Brahma, the most powerful person, is humbly offering his obeisances to Krishna. Verse 19. Oh my Lord, by your humble will, you appear in the various species of living entities, among animals lower than human beings, as well as among the demigods, to perform your transcendental pastimes. You are not affected by material contamination. You come just to fulfill the obligations of your own principles of religion, and therefore, O Supreme Personality, I offer my obeisances unto you for manifesting such different forms. So here's the purpose of incarnations. Which, does this remind you of a verse in Bhagavad Gita? The part about religion, principles of religion? Pariktanaya sadhanam vinashaya chidashikam dushkitam tarma samastampanotaya. He comes to reestablish the principles of religion. So another point in this verse is that the Lord, no matter what form he appears, he is transcendental. What are some examples of the Lord appearing in lower species of life? Yeah.
Brahma.
Yeah.
Hamsa,
swan. Matsya. Kurma.
Hamsa's not exactly a lower species. Hamsa's for man. He said it would be high birds.
Hamsa is what?
He said it would be high birds.
No, this is, but it's lower than human beings.
Yes. Matsya.
Yeah. Hamsa is a swan. Yeah, he appeared to Brahma in the fourth Mars. Hamsa. Not exactly a human being. Of course, you're Paramahansa, so you're thinking about that meaning of Hamsa. Yes. Okay.
Hamsa
is very high, very exalted. Yes, Maharaj, we agree.
In the Lord of Goodness, man. Yes. Where's the Lord of Goodness?
Where's the Lord of Goodness?
And yet the Hamsa.
Yes. Okay. So in this canto, this point, we have to learn this point in the third canto before we go into other cantos. That the Lord is transcendental no matter what form he takes. Even in the form of a hog, he's always transcendental. And then we'll be able to understand Krishna. Just like Varaha comes, he appears in a hog body to lift the earth. So when Krishna appears as a 7-year-old boy, and let's go downhill, we won't be surprised at all to see the Krishna in the form of a very small boy lifting over downhill. So by the time we reach 10th canto, nothing will surprise us. No form will shock us. We'll be ready for everything when we come to the 10th canto. Verse 20. My Lord, you accept the pleasure of sleeping in the water of devastation, where there are violent waves, and you enjoy pleasure on the bed of snakes, showing the happiness of your sleep to intelligent persons. At that time, all the universal planets are stationed within your abdomen. So this is the difference between Krishna and us. We could never enjoy sleeping amidst violent waves in the ocean. We'd be finished. So Prabhupada explains that God sleeps, and God not only sleeps, God eats. Actually, when I was distributing books in Bombay one time, one man, he saw the picture of Akshay Vishnu, and he said, looks to me like he's sick. Why won't these sick people play around like that? So these are some of
Akshay Vishnu.
Yeah, so he says, I think he's sick. But actually, who's really sick is that man. Just like one time, one man asked another man in Bombay, he said to my husband that, I think we should throw Bhagavad Gita into the ocean. We need technology, you know? And so my husband said to him, I think you should throw your brains into the ocean. So the man was into it. Anyway, but these are the things that are going on. In India, they have these crazy ideas about the Lord, these conceptions about the form of the Lord, what he does when God sleeps. So Prabhupada again was talking to his Arya Samaji friend, and his friend said to him, he says, you're offering all these foods in the temple, but does Krishna actually eat the food? He asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, yes. He says, in Bhagavad Gita, Ashnami, I accept. I eat this food. So these are some of the misconceptions. And here we find out that God sleeps. Now the Mayavadis, they don't like this because they think sleeping is Maya. Okay, so let's see what Prabhupada says here in the purport about these people. Persons who cannot think of anything beyond the limit of their own power are like frogs in a well, who cannot imagine the length and breadth of the great Pacific Ocean. So how many times has Prabhupada talked about these frogs in these purports in the third canto already? For the whole creation, he's talking about frogs in the well. And again, we hear about these frogs. Such people take as legendary when they hear that the Supreme Lord is lying on his bed within the great ocean of the universe. They are surprised that one can lie down within water and sleep very happily. What a little intelligence can mitigate this foolish astonishment. There are many living entities within the bed of the ocean who also enjoy material bodily activities of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. If such insignificant living entities can enjoy life within the water, why can't the Supreme Lord, who is all powerful, sleep on the cool body of a serpent and enjoy in the turmoil of violent ocean waves? So what a picture. Here's the Lord, there's huge waves coming, violent waves, and he's enjoying in the cool body of a serpent. So this is Krishna, this is Vishnu. The distinction of the Lord is that his activities are all transcendental, and he's able to do anything and everything without being deterred by limitations of time and space. He can enjoy his transcendental happiness regardless of material considerations. So now, there's a switch in Brahma's prayers. He's focusing more on his immediate situation with Garudakshai Vishnu. Before he was talking about different incarnations and time and so many things. So now he's bringing it back to his own situation. And he's going to start begging for mercy. Verse 21. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe are stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you are enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossomy lotuses in the morning.
Does this mean the statement is after Uttana Kadashi?
No, this is the beginning of Brahma's day, which is much longer than Uttana Kadashi. Unless they also have a Kadashi out there. But not our Kadashi.
The Lord sleeps. The Lord in Garudak Ocean, he takes rest.
Mm-hmm.
He takes rest at Shayana Kadashi. That's for 4 months.
Yeah, so this is actually at the end, the beginning of Brahma's day. Mm-hmm. So this is the beginning of his day. It doesn't mention about the Kadashi. This is after Brahma's night. You know, Brahma's waking up and he's doing what all our pujaris do. When they, after they wake up, then they wake up the Lord. And then they offer prayers. So Brahma, he's offering prayers to the Lord, trying to wake the Lord up at the beginning of his day. The Prabhupada says this in the purport. He says, Brahma is teaching us the beginning of archana regulations from morning 4 o'clock to night 10 o'clock. Early in the morning, devotee has to rise from his bed and pray to the Lord. And there are other regulative principles for offering mangalarti early in the morning. Foolish non-devotees, not understanding the importance of archana, criticize the regulative principles, but they have no eyes to see the Lord also sleeps by his own will. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is so detrimental to the path of devotional service, it is very difficult to associate with the stubborn non-devotees, who almost think in terms of material conceptions. impersonalist. Always think backwards. So how is they, how do they think backwards? What does this mean? Impersonalists think backwards.
They think that the form of the law proceeds from the energy.
Okay, the form comes from energy.
The other way around.
Energy comes from form. Maharaj, how else do they think backwards?
Another thing is that that if you consider the populace to be impersonalistically minded, to be selfishness, then it mentions that whatever they get is viparya.
Okay, whatever they get is viparya, yeah. The opposite.
Yeah.
Okay, but what are some other backwards thinkings, backwards thoughts? Nishinde.
They cannot think that there is a part thing that you want them. They always think
about the future. Right. They think about the material world. Manjoka.
This world is very
gay. Yes. Okay, they think since variety is misery, therefore spiritual life must mean no variety. Yes, Tadri. They don't accept the descending process. Yes, they think they are very powerful, and by their own endeavor, their own mental strength, they can understand and conquer it for us. Yes.
They just make this material.
Yes. Yes. Because the deity sleeps, he must be material, because sleep is material. There's no sleep in the spiritual world. So actually, also another point is Maharaj's point is in Chaitanya Kodashi. Actually, this is the beginning of Brahma's day. So the only thing you can compare it to is like the beginning of our day, like the pujari is waking up the deities. So this is when the Lord, he sleeps every night. The Lord actually goes to sleep at night. The deity, the pujaris put the deities to rest, and then he wakes up in the morning. So this is the sleep that's being talked about here. The Lord sleeps at night. So, according to our different nights, he has different sleeps. Like for our night, he sleeps for a few hours. For Brahma's night, he sleeps for billions of years, according to our calculation. So it's relative according to where we are. So on this planet, he sleeps according to our time of sleep. And in Brahma's planet, he sleeps according to Brahma's time. So now Brahma is waking him up from rest.
How come Brahma is already?
Well, the pujari wakes up before the Lord, right? And then wakes up the Lord. It's described he goes into the abdomen of the Lord. I mean, that's, some scriptures are there that he goes into the Lord's abdomen and sleeps there.
And he comes on his own.
Then he comes, yeah. Well, not on his own. He's been creation by the force of the destiny. Karma, then the lotus. I don't know if you read that. You read that, yes. You read that. By the force of daiva, or karma, then the lotus comes out. They're pushed by. That's utaya. Utaya. That's one of the subjects of. 10 subjects of Bhagavatam. Utaya. Utaya. The cause. Impetus. So this is the impetus for this world. The impetus for his birth is this karmic activity, the karma. And Prabhupada said that's the first cause of creation. It's this karma, this destiny, or daiva. Okay, let's go on in the purport. As we discussed all of this, because they think, because there is form and matter, spirit should be formless. Because in matter there is sleep and spirit, there cannot be sleep. And because the sleeping of the deity is accepted in Archa worship, the Archana is Maya. All these thoughts are basically material. To think either positively or negatively is still thinking materially. Knowledge accepted from the superior source of the Vedas is standard. Here in these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that Archana is recommended. So if we were to read the verses, we would say, how is Archana recommended? But because we have Srila Prabhupada here with his purports, and he understands the principles that we're seeing, this is Archana. Brahma is waking up the deity. He's waking up his Lord first thing in the morning. Before Brahma took up the task of creation, he found the Lord sleeping on the serpent bed in the waves of the water of devastation. Therefore, sleeping exists in the internal potency of the Lord. This is not denied by pure devotees of the Lord like Brahma in his specific succession. It is clearly said here, the Lord slept very properly. Is the violet waves of the water manifesting thereby, he is able to do anything and everything by his transcendental will and not be hampered by any circumstances. So a very similar scene is described when in Krishna book, at the end of Krishna book, when Krishna took Arjuna to go through the layers of the universe, and they went to visit Mahavishnu in Vaikuntha. This is the 89th chapter of Krishna book. There's a description there of the scene. Prabhupada says, when Lord Krishna and Arjuna entered the water, this is of course a different water, it's the causal ocean, but we can understand it applies here also. It appeared there is a strong hurricane of transcendental effulgence blowing. So a hurricane of effulgence, you can imagine. And the water, the Karna ocean, was greatly agitated. So then here we have our hurricanes, and there they have their hurricanes of effulgence. So Brahman is not static. They have hurricanes in the Brahman. Hurricanes in the Brahman effulgence. So these things are going on in the spiritual world, and we try to understand it with our limited ideas. We could never think of hurricanes of effulgence. I can't even imagine it, but it exists. And so this is going on. So the Lord is having violent waves. He's enjoying his sleep. And Prabhupada says, by the grace of Lord Krishna, Arjuna had the unique experience of being able to see a very beautiful Karna ocean. So the Garbhagriha ocean also, it has hurricanes. And these descriptions are here in Bhagavatam for us to understand what's going on in the spiritual world and to destroy our misconceptions. So if we think there's no sleep in the spiritual world, if we thought that, now we should give that thought up. There is sleep. There are hurricanes. These things are happening in the spiritual world.
There's no night in the spiritual world.
There's no night?
Well, how is there sleep?
Anyway, Prabhupada gave an answer. Somebody asked him a question about the spiritual world. What about the prasad? The food is conscious, so if you eat it, what happens to the food? So that was a similar question like that. There's no night. So Prabhupada said, first you cure your disease, and then you think about dancing. So the answer is that first we have to cure all our misconceptions, and then we can understand what's happening in the spiritual world. So how there is night and simultaneously no night and sleep, that can only happen in the spiritual world. Because it's described as it's completely light. There's no darkness there. But there may also be night there, even though there's no darkness. So either there's no night or there is night, we can't understand. In our because we think night means dark. Of course, if you go to Sweden, then it's not dark at night. In summer, I was in Sweden, and there's hardly any night. The sun doesn't go down, actually. But you still have to sleep. It's very hard to sleep with the full bright sun shining on you at 10 o'clock at night. It was very difficult then. So, yeah, I was there in the summer, and the sun doesn't set, actually. It just kind of hovers over the horizon. Yeah, it was rough. Like, I tried to sleep at 8, and it was blazing sun. And then you get up, there's plenty of Mangal Artis. It's quite difficult. Any time you wake up, it's light. Anyway, it's very difficult. Anyway, the spiritual world is quite difficult arrangement. Because their sleep is also meditative sleep. But then their sleep, they're meditating.
You don't have to worry about melatonin.
Yes.
That's why you know this principle is the highest rate of suicide.
What?
That's why you know the neurotic is very high rate of
suicide.
High rate
of suicide.
Because you go crazy.
They go crazy, yeah. The body can't adjust, yeah.
You seem to understand what you mentioned once, that you take one glutamine and it goes on eternally. You take another glutamine and that also goes on eternally. Could you imagine?
Okay, here's another inconceivable.
Use the lecture.
You take one glutamine and it goes on eternally. You take another glutamine and it goes on eternally.
The taste goes on eternally.
The taste.
So can you imagine?
Oh yeah, Prabhupada was, I have another one too. Just like the third verse of Bhagavatam talks about the fruit, the ripened fruit. Bhagavatam is described like a fruit but it's also described as rasa, or juice, that you can drink. So how is it fruit and juice at the same time? So that's
semi-soft.
Yes. Well, it's described that the fruits in the spiritual world, they have no skin and no seed. So when you eat the fruit, it's just like drinking juice. So Bhagavatam is like that. It's no skin and no seed. So it's very easy to digest. Of course, then we have Shivadev and we have Prabhupada digesting it for us, so it's even more sweet and soft.
Another thing is kind of mentioned that taste is irrelevant. So how can you
eat other things? Yes. Her question is, taste is eternal, so how can you eat other things? But the point is that variety is the mother of enjoyment. So real enjoyment is the variety of tastes, not just one taste.
Did you mean all the tastes you
mean? All the tastes you mean. But they're always increasing also. Okay? And not only that, I have one more story. Yes. No, they... So Gurudas once asked Srila Prabhupada about the fruits in the spiritual world. You know, what are the fruits like? And Prabhupada described, yes, the fruits have no skin and no seed, and as soon as you finish eating one fruit, another fruit appears in your hand until you're satisfied with all the fruits. And then no more fruits come. And today we are very fortunate to have our wonderful microphone that goes without lecture. Inconceivable today. So in one sense, it's good that our other microphone failed, because now we have a continuous microphone. Okay, so anyway, we don't have continuous light. So Bhagavatam is like that, that you taste one part of Bhagavatam, and another part comes for you to taste. And another part comes, and another part. Until you're satisfied. And of course, you never get satisfied. You keep wanting to taste. The more you taste, the more you want to taste. Bhagavatam. So this is, okay, Madhavendra Puri, you can tell us your story now. Yes.
Oh, okay. I mean, this is something regarding night in the spiritual world.
Diet in the spiritual world?
The night.
Night in the spiritual world, okay.
I heard the Vinod Bhakti Chumbalaj saying that if there is a need of night, for the enhancement of Lord Krishna's pastimes, the night personified will appear at noon.
Okay.
He says like that.
Okay.
If there is a need of night now for the Lila, night will
yes.
And no one will be doing things.
So the spiritual world, if they need night, they can appear at any time, even at noon, if they need it for the pastimes. Because here in time, we can't have control time. Time is a representative of the Lord. It just goes on. But in the spiritual world, time is according to the pastimes, it's malleable. There's no past, present, and future. But then the conception, it's a servant of the pastimes, of Krishna. It's a servant, subservient. That's the word I was looking for. Yes. The time is subservient. Here, time is, everybody's under time, even Brahma. But in the spiritual world, time is the servant of Krishna also. Okay.
So Nidra.
Nidra. Yoga Nidra. Okay, verse 22. Let the Supreme Lord be merciful towards me. He is the one friend and soul of all living entities in the world, and he maintains all for their ultimate happiness by his six transcendental opulences. May he be merciful towards me, so that I, as before, may be empowered with the introspection to create. For I am also one of the surrendered souls who are dear to the Lord. So now he's praying to the Lord's merciful side. He's saying, Surya Eka Atma, that you are the friend of everyone. And he says, you are merciful to the surrendered souls, and I am a surrendered soul, so therefore, you should be merciful to me. That's what he's saying. He's using this logic. Arjuna used the same logic in the first canto. Narottam Das Thakur?
Raghunath Das.
Raghunath Das?
You have to be merciful to me because you are not part of
Patita Pavan. I'm the most fallen, and you're the deliverer of the most fallen, so therefore I should be first.
Yeah.
I'm first in line for mercy. Maharaj.
Raghunath Das Goswami prays to Govardhan Hill that you're the source of everyone's happiness and the happiness of the cows, the land, Therefore, you should be merciful to unhappy me and give me association near you.
Okay, Raghunath Das Goswami is going to give it us. Pache.
I'm going to go to Nathwani, but we'll put the tongue to him.
Pache, yes.
Vrindavas is singing one bhajan.
Who? Vrindavasi? Vrindavasi is singing a bhajan.
So, that Krishna, you are playing the Dina Bandhu, but you are not helping me still.
Yes.
It means I am not fallen over. Tell me one kind of sin which I should not commit, so I will do it. And I become fallen, so do you.
Yes, and I think they take this bhajan to heart sometimes. So Krishna is, has a Vrindavasi bhajan. He says, Krishna, you're a Dinabandhu, but you're not being, so you're merciful to the fallen, but you're not being merciful to me, so that means I must not be sinful enough, so what sin should I commit so that I can become qualified to get your mercy? It sounds like logical, right? Vrindavasi logic, yes.
It's all a bit like Buddha when he was, pesting against, not pesting, but he was comparing his fate with the demons.
Yes, yes. Buddha said, demons are more fortunate. They got the mercy. Putana got the mercy. What about me? I'm still here. So Arjuna, when he was praying to Krishna in the first canto, he used the same logic as Brahma. And this is, I don't know the exact verse, but the Brahmastra was coming after him, and he was saying, what is this light, and then he started praying to Krishna, and he said that, actually, you are very merciful, where is it here? It's 1725, actually. He says, you descend to benefit your friends, especially your exclusive devotees, who are wrapped in meditation upon you. So therefore, he's saying, what about me? I'm here, I'm your friend, and this Brahmastra is coming. So you should do something about this. So, of course, he always remembered to glorify the Lord's qualities, even if they're great trouble. So, this is the mood of the devotees. That Lord Brahma is showing the mood that, please be merciful. I deserve your mercy. You're the friend of everyone, and I'm in this world, and you're the friend of everyone in this world. So therefore, I'm a surrendered soul, you're merciful to the surrendered soul, so please be merciful to me. The demigods also, they offer prayers to the Lord, the last prayer in the fifth chapter. Please give us your perfect knowledge and potency so we can do service for you in the creation. Shri Goswami also, he says, you be pleased with me, decorate my statements. So now there's one Sanskrit word here which describes exactly what Brahma is praying for. Very important Sanskrit word. I'm not going to ask you because I'm going to tell you the answer. So here it's for you. There's one Sanskrit word and it's what Brahma is praying for his inability to create. You know Mahamoka? Yes, Mahamoka.
I think it's two words.
Two words, you think. Okay, tell me. Two words.
Disham.
Shrakshami. Shrakshami is, so I will be able to create. But the word is Disham, yes. This is what he wants. What power he wants, what power he needs to create is Disham. Now the Sanskrit word Disham, generally we think Disham means to see, power of seeing. Disham, the eyes, darshan. Disham. Just like when you're talking about Dhritarashtra, who says, Vinashta Drishti, his vision was destroyed. So here Brahma, that's in the first chapter, for Vinashta Drishti. So Drishta means vision. So he's asking for vision to create, he needs vision. And Prabhupada translates it in word for word, power of introspection. So this is what he's asking for. To create the power of introspection of all things. So this means insight. This means the sight within, the internal vision. In order to create the universe, he needed insight. He needed introspection. Disham. So this is what he's begging for. This is the mercy he's begging for. This power of introspection. Verse 23. The Supreme Lord, Personality of God, is always a benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal focus in Rama, by the goddess of fortune. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world, and I pray that I not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. So what attitude is he showing us now with Rama? This is an attitude. Yes, my Puri.
He's showing the same attitude as in the second canto.
Same attitude as in the second canto.
He's, right after the Shatashloki, before, he's asking, please,
yes, before,
allow me to create the Ashram for another bride.
Yes.
And Krishna benedicts him by saying yes.
Yes. I should not fall under the sway of pride. So he's very afraid of pride. Rama is afraid of becoming proud. Of course, he has good reason to be afraid. He's a lot to be proud about. If we could just create a house by our own will or a planet, we would be so proud. We could just create something small, anything. We would think, wow, this is your, we show everybody and say, look what I did. So Brahma, he creates the whole universe. So he has reason to be proud, and he has reason to be afraid of pride. And so Prabhupada explains what is the way of becoming dear to the Lord and receiving his benediction in the purport. What is the actual mood that we have to adopt? Yes.
Instrument,
yes. Brahma sees himself as an assistant, as an instrument to the Lord for the creation. So that's what Prabhupada says. Brahma, who's only an assistant in the modes of creation, wanted to remain in his actual position as an instrument of the Lord instead of becoming puffed up by a false prestige of thinking himself the creator. That is the way of becoming dear to the Supreme Lord and receiving his benediction. So if anybody wants to become dear to Krishna and receive his benediction, you just have to adopt this attitude. I want to be an instrument. Foolish men want to take credit for all creations made by them, but intelligent persons know very well not a blade of grass can move without the will of the Lord. Thus all the credit for wonderful creatures must belong to him. By spiritual consciousness only can one be freed from the contamination of material affection and receive benedictions offered by the Lord. So Shukadeva prays, please decorate my statements. So this is the mood of Shukadeva. Prabhupada also says the devotee feels instrumental. When anybody would praise Prabhupada, he would say, actually, it's the mercy of my spiritual master. And if I can take credit for anything, it's only one thing I can take credit for. You know what that is that Prabhupada took credit for? Yes. I didn't change anything. That's what Prabhupada said. You can give me credit for that. I didn't change a word. I didn't change anything. So we can take credit for that. We just don't change it. Just don't destroy it, Prabhupada has made, but maintain it. So verse 24, the Lord's potencies are innumerable. As he lies down in the water of devastation, I am born as a total universal energy from the navel lake in which the lotus sprouts. I am now engaged in manifesting his diverse energies in the form of the cosmic manifestation. I therefore pray that in the course of my material activities, I may not be deviated from the vibration of the Vedic hymns. So in the last verse, he prayed for blessings to perform his service and protection from pride. And now he's making protection from deviation. Why is he so afraid of falling into deviation? What's the problem? What's his fear now of falling down? Yeah.
Fear is that he may try to adjust something.
Okay, his fear is that he's going to try to adjust something. Any other fear that he has? He's afraid of bad association, actually. He's afraid, Prabhupada says, that he has to contact so many vicious living entities. See what Prabhupada says in the purport. Now here, this purport is for us. Every person engaged in transcendental loving service of the Lord in this material world is prone to so many material activities. And if one is not strong enough to protect himself against the onslaught of material affection, he may be diverted from the spiritual energy. So how do we protect ourselves We're probably, we're in the service, we're going to so many material activities, where else?
By remaining always in the Association of Devotees and hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord.
Always remain in the Association of Devotees, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord.
Yes. Fully dependent on Krishna.
Remain fully dependent on Krishna, Madhav Puri.
Fencing or spiritual garden.
What's that? Oh, fencing our spiritual garden. The garden in our heart. And what's the fence?
The Vishnu and the prohibitions and the...
Okay, the...
And,
the regulative principles. Regulative principles.
Do's and don'ts.
Do's and don'ts.
Actually, in 6 says the fence is also seen as the Mahabhagavats.
The Mahabhagavats.
Mahabhagavats.
Okay, association. As Maharaj said, that's our fence to protect us. Patri. Humility is our protection against fall down. Yes, because pride comes before the fall. In Shiva.
Following the instructions of the spiritual master.
Yes.
Strictly
follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Don't change it and don't deviate. Patri.
Actually, regarding that, we should change the size. And in this sense, I came my realization when you're going on square, we have not a red square, so deep. You know, and when you're going, you cannot fall down. Like, the razor is very sharp.
Razor is very sharp, okay?
But micro, you cannot never be cut. Because you
cannot. Okay, so he makes a very nice point here, Patri. That if you're going, if you're traveling on top of a razor, if you're happening to walk on the edge of a razor, it's better to be a very small micro, because then it's easier to stay on the edge. So the smaller you are, the less chance of falling off of the razor's edge. Now, if you're very big, it'll be kind of hard to walk on the razor. Yes.
Prabhupada explains in the purport that full dependence on the Lord should be manifested because they are constantly waiting for His protection.
Yes. Yeah, we'll read that purport actually, it's very beautiful. We'll read about what Prabhupada says here. What Prabhupada says, how we can protect ourselves from fall down. So here's why Brahma's afraid. This is, we're continuing. In the material creation, Brahma has to create all kinds of living entities with bodies suitable to their material conditions. Brahma wants to be protected by the Lord because he has to contact many, many vicious living entities. Just imagine, we're here in this room with all these vicious living entities. What to speak of us? An ordinary Brahmin may fall from the Brahma Tejas or power of medical excellence due to his association with many fallen conditioned souls that we see this happen. Brahma, as the supermost Brahmin, is afraid of such a father. Therefore, he prays to the Lord for protection. This is a warning for one and all in the spiritual advancement. So that means us. Nobody is excluded. One and all. Nobody is out of this warning. All of us. Unless one is sufficiently protected by the Lord, he may fall down from his spiritual position. Therefore, what to do, Prabhupada tells us. Most important instruction by Srila Prabhupada. One has to pray constantly to the Lord for protection and the blessing to carry out one's duty. So we all, so protection from what? The two things that Brahma said, these are very important things to pray for protection. We think, when we pray for protection, I'm sure we think of many other things to be protected from. But Brahma has two fears that he's praying for protection. That is pride and deviation.
Deviation. From bad, protection from bad association.
Yeah. Protection from bad association. Well, he specifically mentions pride and deviation. Yeah, deviation is due to bad association. Deviation will be, if you have bad association, you deviate from the Vedic hymn. So these two things are very important. And we see it in so many examples in our own society that fall down due to pride and deviation. Both of them are there. So this is for us not to do the same mistake, and how to protect ourselves from this fall-down. Prabhupada is telling us what to do. We constantly pray for protection from fall-down. Lord Chaitanya also entrusted his missionary work to his devotees and assured them of his protection against the onslaught of material affection. So what does Lord Chaitanya say? Jari Dekho Tari Koho Pashya Pradesh Amarga Guru Boya Taro Nidesh. You become guru, you deliver these people. Among order, you become guru. And whoever you meet, you tell them about Krishna, Krishna Pradesh. Then if you do this, that if you do this, I promise you, you will not be affected by your materialistic association, and you will again meet me at this place, or you will constantly have my association. I don't have the
rhythm.
Oh, this is the Kurma Brahman, actually, yeah. This is the Kurma Brahman. Kurma Brahman. I don't have the reference, actually. I just did it by heart.
Madhya 7128.
Madhya?
7128.
That is a reference. A very famous verse of the Holy Book, Shri Prabhupada. The whole Chaitanya. Madhya 7128. 128. And then 129 must be the second part that I quoted. About not falling down. The promise. He says, you preach, you become guru, and I will protect you from bad association, and again you will see me. Two promises. I'll protect you and you will see, you will get my darshan. So what does Krishna promise in Bhagavad Gita to the preachers? Does he preach? They will be the most dear. What else? What does he promise them? Besides
me. They will get devotional service is guaranteed.
Devotional service is guaranteed, and? Yeah, that's another, yeah.
And they'll come back to me?
They'll come back to me, yes. I will give them pure devotional service is guaranteed, and they will come back to me. How does Krishna, what else does Krishna say in Gita in relationship to protection of his devotees?
Janihi,
Dhamma Bhakta Pramashti. Yes. And he will also protect them against Pachi.
Yes.
Okay. Even a smaller endeavor in this path, they have become an ashasti, but divine identity. Sakamakyasadharva said, Tayate, Manatobaya, I will protect them from the greatest fear. Also, that Ananyas Chinyan Brahman, Nijana Parivasate. That I will give them what they protect what they have and bury what they lack. So Krishna gives so many promises. Lord Chaitanya gives promises to the preacher. Now at the end, there's a purport at the end. It says the path of spiritual life is stated in the Veda to be like the edge of a sharpened razor, as Bhattri Prabhu pointed out. A little inattentiveness may at once create havoc and bloodshed. But one who is a completely surrendered soul, always seeking protection from the Lord in the discharge of his entrusted duties, has no fear of falling into material contamination. So it's very important. We always have to remember who we are. Just like Brahma, he knows who he is. He's not the creator. He knows that. He's the assistant of the Lord of creation. He's not the creator. So he knows that, even though he's so big. He's the head of our sampradaya. So we should follow his example, his attitude, his humility, that how small are we, that we can always remember this. And as soon as we think we're advanced, then that's fall down. Just that thought, yeah.
I was just thinking, I don't think Karma can do this, because he owns himself, he has as a fruit.
What's that?
I was thinking, only Nishkama could do this.
Only Nishkama could do this.
Yeah, because he's offering himself before coming in.
Right. Okay, so she's giving us a very interesting insight here, that the Nishkam devotee will offer everything before he does the activity, whereas the Sakam devotee will offer, at first he'll do the activity, then he'll offer the fruits. So the Nishkam, he's offering before, he's saying, this is for you, this seva, I'm doing this service, so please help me. Yeah.
Often in this context, the karma you give first, work and surrender, whereas the bhakta, surrender, then work.
Yes.
In other words, the bhakta doesn't have anything to offer, he has only offered himself.
Yes.
Whereas the nishkama, there's still a notion of doership, because he's still something I'm offering to Krishna.
The sakam.
So then, even the nishkama is not to say, because there's still a notion of doership, whereas the pure devotee,
Krishna, morning.
Yeah.
But now, Lord Brahma is saying, Vishadam, dejection. Why should Brahma be dejected? Why is Brahma unhappy here? Why would a devotee be unhappy? Why, what's the problem here with Brahma? Dejection. Nobody knows. The answer is, he cannot do his service. So therefore he's unhappy. That's when a devotee becomes unhappy, if he can't do his service for Krishna. So he can't do his service, he needs the Lord's help. He needs the Lord's empowerment. Also, he got depressed when he saw the devastating water, too. That's another enough to depress you. You see the whole devastation there in front of you. So now in the purport, in the middle, Prabhupada talks about Rasleela again. Liberated souls can join in blissful reciprocation of predominator and predominated without materially concocted ideas, such as night and day. A typical example of such a transcendental exchange between the predominator and predominated is the Lord's Rasleela with the gopis. The gopis are predominated expansions of the internal potency, and therefore the Lord's participation in Rasleela dance is never to be considered like the mundane relationship of man and woman. It is rather the highest perfectional stage of exchange of feelings between the Lord and the living entities.